evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, July 12, 2024. Sudanese rival groups meet in Geneva to discuss ceasefire plans.
The humanitarian situation in Sudan is deteriorating by the day, so we really need to look at the devastating impact that this has on the civilian population.
And authorities in South Sudan reopen Al-Watan Arabic newspaper.
People just went there, armed in armed vehicles, and ordered that papers be closed, and they left. So every institution you would ask police, they would say, no, we don't know. You ask national security, they say, no, we don't know, and so on and so on. But finally, they have said they have been given a green light to open.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations reports both delegations of Sudan's warring parties have turned up for a second day of UN-mediated ceasefire talks in Geneva, aimed at protecting and providing humanitarian assistance to millions of civilians devastated by the conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The talks got off to a rocky start Thursday when one of the delegations failed to show up. Without revealing which party stayed away, UN spokesperson in Geneva, Alessandra Vellucci, confirms they now are underway. What is important, she says, is that senior representatives from both the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces have accepted the invitation of the Secretary General's personal envoy, Ramtan Lamamra, to continue the discussions today. They were involved in separate proximity talks with Lamamra's team.
We urge them to participate because, as you all know, I mean, we've also spoken about this here on this podium, the humanitarian situation in Sudan is deteriorating by the day. So we really need to look at the devastating impact that this has on the civilian population. And we urge the delegations to rise up to this challenge and engage in constructive discussions.
Since rival generals triggered the conflict in mid-April 2023, the United Nations reports nearly 19,000 people have been killed, 33,000 injured, 12.7 million displaced, and some 18 million people are suffering from acute hunger. Vellucci says the Sudanese delegations are not meeting face-to-face, but are engaging in so-called proximity talks with the UN mediator, who shuttles between the two delegations.
The two delegations are comprised of senior representatives, that's what I can tell you, who have been delegated by the leaders of the warring parties to participate in the talks. And the delegations are composed of humanitarian, security and military experts. So that's what I can tell you about the delegations and the delegation level.
The UN spokesperson says she does not know how long the talks will last. She says what is important is that the warring parties identify and agree on ways to protect and assist the civilian population, possibly by agreeing on local ceasefires. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move back to Juba, where security forces in South Sudan have given an Arabic newspaper a green light to resume operations after the paper was shut down for publishing a condolence message from President Salva Kiir to Israel after the Hamas October attack. Some media houses in South Sudan say they are worried about the future of press freedom in the country. Dennis Logonyi reports for VOA from Juba.
Workers at Al-Watan newspaper are back to business after the Arabic leading daily was allowed to open its doors by the National Security Service. Patrick Koyed, the president of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, UJOS, says the union was not able to trace the institution that ordered closure of Al-Watan newspaper.
It wasn't clear. Even the National Security Service officers were saying they were not even very much sure who closed it, because it was closed in a very unceremonial way and procedural. A number of people just went there, armed in armed vehicles, and ordered that papers be closed, and they left. So every institution you would ask police, they would say, no, we don't know. You ask national security, they say, no, we don't know, and so on and so on. But finally, they have said they have been given a green light to open.
Irene Aya, the chairperson of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, says the management of Al-Watan told her that they were shut down for publishing a government document.
According to the management of Al-Watan newspaper, of which we have been in contact with, they told us that the newspaper was closed following a publication that they did concerning a condolence message that was written and by the office of the president.
Oyet says lengthy negotiations with the national security led to the reopening of the newspaper.
In South Sudan now, the newspapers that write in Arabic are very few. And for us, we have members who are actually Arabic pattern, write in Arabic, read Arabic. And also we have a big audience, especially in the north of the country. When you go to Upper Nile, to Northern Bargazal, and even Unity State, there are so many people who read and write Arabic, and they're very happy when they have these newspapers.
Aya says freedom of speech is under attack in South Sudan, adding that the shutting down of Al-Watan is a sign of government reprisal.
We know that currently we have the media authority, which is supposed to handle media-related cases, and we did not actually expect the closure of Al-Watan. We thought that media-related cases would be handled through the media authority. And so even the prolonged closure was really, we became very concerned, because any time a media house is closed down, the people who read the newspaper, they miss information.
Omara Joseph, an activist with the South Sudan Human Rights Defenders Network, says security institutions should work with the government-owned media authority to handle complaints against media houses.
Having institutions that still took the operations of these media houses sometimes causes an alarm, and it is still the same process of denying access to information and expression. I really want to thank the authorities this time around. If they have decided generally to open this media house, it is a good news for the media fraternity and also for those who are fighting for good democratic ideals in the Republic of South Sudan.
This program contacted the government-owned media authority for comments on the reopening of Al-Watan, but we were told the head of the media authority was in a meeting. Al-Watan newspaper was closed on November 24, 2023, after it published a letter of condolence from the office of President Salva Kiir to Israel after the October Hamas attack. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to neighboring Kenya, where luxurious cars, private helicopters, and lots of cash. The lavish lifestyle of Kenya's lawmakers splashed across TikTok and X added fuel to anger simmering last month among young plugged-in population over proposed tax hikes. In a sign of pressure, the protests are keeping on President William Ruto. On Thursday, he dismissed his entire cabinet, apart from Foreign Minister. Amos Wanga spoke to people on the streets of Nairobi to get their reactions.
President did the best, and it was very appropriate and very timely, because indeed, if you look at the budget for 2024-2025, it had a lot of expenditures, which out of it, almost 80% was salaries, which I think by dissolving that cabinet, he did the best thing that we are supposed to have him.
I just want to congratulate President Ruto for what he did. But even though he dissolved the cabinets, which is okay, but we still expect more, because we have seen that he left the prime cabinets, which is unconstitutional. So I expected that to be done wholly. So if he just wanted to do away with these people, then he was supposed to clear up everything and start afresh.
What he did for a start is a good thing. Yes, wish there can be more measures now that they've gone home. If they can take some measures to retrieve whatever was lost in terms of corruptions, budgeted corruptions, lost money, it can be a good start. But that's the bare minimum. It was in the end.
What Kenyans want now, at the moment, we need to get rid of corruption in the cabinet. So he has started well, because we wanted to select some who can do the job right at the moment, because we want the job to be done right. And if we do the budget, we know the budget is budgeted not on corruption purposes, but on delivering services to Kenyans. That is all.
From what we are seeing, there's no turning back. There's no turning back until we put our leaders back to track, and we want, some of us want new faces. Because some faces tumekuwa tukiziona, we've been seeing them since we were born until now. Let there be new faces, let there be changes, let there be something new in Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the world population is projected to grow. Find out why after the break.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thursday was World Population Day. The issue of population growth intersects with the climate change, posing a serious threat to global food security. Experts warn that crop yields could decrease by 30% in 2050, while the world's population is projected to exceed 10 billion by 2100. The World Food Prize Foundation and the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center are convening over 200 farmers, scientists, agro-business leaders, and policymakers to discuss strategies for improving farmer livelihood and ensuring food security around the world. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The global population is expected to grow over the next 60 years, from 8.2 billion today to 10.3 billion in the 2080s. Much of that growth will occur in Africa, where many countries will have high fertility rates. The United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, says climate change is expected to exacerbate global inequalities and trigger national and international migration. UN agencies say 1 billion of the 1.3 billion people living in Africa struggle to afford healthy diets, and hunger worsened between 2019 and 2022. Africa's farmland has been shrinking because of persistent drought, while the growing population leaves less space to farm. Chris Ojiewo is a principal scientist at the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center. He says African farmers need to produce a lot of food in small spaces to feed the growing population.
We cannot even think of a human way or ethical way to stop population growth, so let it grow. But let us be able to produce more within a small area. For example, where we are able to produce only 1 ton of maize, let's say per hectare, why don't we work, and that's what we are doing, to improve this productivity to go beyond 1 ton to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 10 tons per hectare, considering developing varieties but also production systems that enable us to be able to produce in intensified system on one hand, but also to be able to produce even when there is drought.
Speaking at a conference this week in Mexico, Anne Vaughan, Deputy Assistant Administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, said that scientific research and technology can help farmers cope with climate change and assist them in cultivating diverse crops.
To help make sure we're accelerating smart innovations so that farmers are getting access, so even in the face of pretty horrific drought, they're still able to produce food for themselves and their families. And what that looks like is making sure we have the right science, the right seeds, the right private sector partners who are pulling and creating a demand for these types of seeds, diversifying, so you're not just growing maize, but you're growing cowpea and other things that are more resilient to climate change, the right type of practices so that you're mixing and intercropping, having less till.
The U.S. government launched Feed the Future in 2010, an initiative aimed at addressing the causes of hunger and poverty in developing countries worldwide. The program improved African agriculture system by promoting sustainable practices that consider climate challenges, that help increase economic opportunities, employment and trade. In some African countries, the dominance of maize crops as the primary source of food has worried experts. The crop relies on rain, and climate change is causing unpredictable rainfall patterns. Ogiowo says African farmers must change when and what they grow to produce enough food.
Ensuring that production and productivity continues, whether it is in season or off season, not necessarily relying 100% on rain-fed agriculture. And the diversification that I mentioned here also is not over relying on one single crop for population survival. I know many countries are relying on either maize or something of that sort in terms of cereals, and ignoring some of the other crops that would fit into these systems.
Due to increasing drought in several African countries, farmers are urged to cultivate crops such as cassava, sorghum, pigeon peas, and pearl millet, which are resilient to unpredictable and harsh weather conditions. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
From gastro-diplomatic issues, we now go to politics, where U.S. President Joe Biden is rejecting calls by some leaders of his political party to step down as its candidate, following a debate with Donald Trump last month in which Biden sometimes struggled. If Biden is not the Democratic Party nominee, who would be? VOA correspondent Scott Stans looks at some of the contenders.
President Joe Biden says he's in this race to win.
I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president.
Following his debate struggles late last month, some leaders of his party are calling on Biden to step down as the presumptive Democratic nominee. But after months of voter primaries and caucuses, the Democratic Party cannot force him out, says University of Virginia Center for Politics Director Larry Sabato.
There is only one way for a nominee to be removed, and that is for the nominee to decide not to run before the convention, to open it up, to let the, in this case, Democratic National Committee set the rules for the convention.
If Biden does step down, Vice President and running mate Kamala Harris would top the list of Democrats to replace him. Harris says Biden is the party's nominee and demonstrated her loyalty by sliding Trump, who has split from his former Vice President Mike Pence.
Note, between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, only one candidate on that stage has the endorsement of his own vice president. Joe Biden.
Harris, as the party's presidential nominee, might help with independent voters, says University of Southern California political science professor Christian Gross.
The one thing with Kamala Harris that I think makes her a little bit more electable than Biden right now, so if you look at the polling, there's more independents who are undecided about her. So she can persuade people in a way that Biden maybe can't persuade people to move.
Also on the completely unofficial list of people who might replace Biden is California Governor Gavin Newsom. He, too, says he's backing Biden and showed his support campaigning for the president's reelection in Michigan last week.
I care about, you know, results. And outputs, and he's produced. And so, you know, I'll leave more objective minds to judge that. But I'm not looking for a performer-in-chief. I'm looking for a commander-in-chief.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer is among those discussed as a possible Biden replacement. She, too, says she's still backing the president. Whitmer won re-election in an important swing state and is popular with national Democrats for supporting labor unions and efforts to combat gun violence.
Week after week in America, we see grim, familiar headlines. Every place you can think of, every situation you can imagine has been shattered by gun violence.
Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear is less known nationally than Newsom or Whitmer, but he is a popular governor in a southern region dominated by Republican politics. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker hosts this year's Democratic convention and has the personal wealth to self-finance much of what would be a last-minute presidential run. And then there's former First Lady Michelle Obama, who has consistently rejected any notion of running for office, but who remains popular with many voters. A Reuters Ipsos poll last week showed Biden and Trump in a tie, but Michelle Obama beating Trump by more than 10 percentage points. Sabato says there's no way she's running.
She's much too smart after 8 years in the White House to want to go back, much less to be president. So, you know, we could speculate about names all night long. But what matters is who has the intense ambition, the ability to raise money, and the opportunity to put together the kind of coalition that could produce a majority in the convention.
If Biden stays in the race, that speculation about other names may carry on through next month's Democratic Party convention in Chicago. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
It's time now for us to hear from you what you think we should do with this program. Tell us what you like us to do and what you don't like us to do. And today, we'll start with a voice message from a listener.
Hello, VOA. My name is Akol Ajet Michael. The recent national security law passed by our members of parliament is shameful. I beg the people of South Sudan to forgive me for calling them, I mean members of parliament, our members of parliament, because they don't represent us. They represent themselves and their self-serviced eating political parties. They did it to complement the ongoing dictatorship in the country. They did it to continue sitting on us. And I have no doubt in my mind that it will be assented to by the president. We can do nothing about it. What happened in Kenya recently cannot happen in South Sudan here. People of South Sudan know very well that if they try to exercise their democratic rights, it will not go well with them. So we can do nothing about it. May Almighty God have mercy upon us. Thank you.
Ezra Sambua writes, Hello, John Tanza. I'm from VP Refugee Settlement. I'm not sure that peace in South Sudan will come true from human talk. Unless our leaders in South Sudan become born again, we will find peace in our country, South Sudan. Kedar from Eastern Equatoria State writes, Hello, VOA. I'm wishing my country happy birthday. Though people are suffering from hunger and tribal instability, I believe some years to come the country will settle and citizens will enjoy the fruits, honey and milk of the nation. Mading Malwal Aluang in Juba writes, Hello, after spending years of no Independence Day celebration under the pretext of lack of money, as if we want money to gather at any Freedom Square to celebrate this important day. They have hijacked this important day from us and want to dictate how we should celebrate our own Independence Day. We won't allow it. Just celebrate it in your own way and style. You can play your drum, music, and dance at home. Organize for traditional dance and serious eating in your area. Organizing for morning sessions or reflections on years wasted for nothing. Happy 13th anniversary. A listener writes, I'm Manasseh Jamane Clement from Rhino Camp Refugee Settlement, Uganda. Thanks for current updates about my country, South Sudan. We still pray and hope for a better South Sudan. A listener who did not mention his or her name writes, Good morning and good evening to all VOA. I always appreciate my brother John Tanza for giving us all the good updates on the world news. It gives us good updates on world events, especially those of us who are outside the country. We will feel the suffering of our people of South Sudan. God protect all of us around the country. Thanks, Aku John Tanza. We love you all with your family. Regards to your kids. Daniel Anei writes, Dear VOA, I am a student from the University of Juba College of Education in Yei. I totally agree with the protesters from University of Bahr al-Ghazal. Also, Warab State, we still demand 9 months' salary from the government starting from September last year up to June this year. How do you expect me as a full-time teacher to feed my children? This government should think twice. And my question to the government is, if they are the ones spending 9 months without seeing money, how will they feel the living conditions should be? Do they really value others as they value themselves? I request South Sudanese to decide wisely during these elections. Hakim Adinka from Yei, South Sudan, writes, South Sudan Parliament must know that power and the authority they have is donated to them by the people of South Sudan. There is a total dilemma about the passing of the bill of the National Security Service into act. They need to listen to people's demands. Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3, Bor Town, writes, the Greater Pibor Administrative Area should agree amicably with their counterparts in Eastern Equatorial State before they move in for search of pasture. And to my authorities in Eastern Equatorial State, Greater Pibor Administrative Area is no longer under Jongle. It is an administrative area with their own independent leadership. Andrew Masionik from Western Equatorial State, Yambio, writes, if the president of South Sudan is calling on all the rebels or political parties to attend the peace talks in the Kenyan capital, and some of them are rejecting, why are they still staying in the bush to make life for us difficult as citizens? Citizens of South Sudan are really suffering from the high fluctuation of the dollar rate, and the firing of the Minister of Finance will not resolve the problem of dollar rate. It's really affecting the economy of the country or individuals who are living in South Sudan. Ayin Yak Dao in West Nile City of Arua writes, the signing of peace by the holdout groups in Nairobi is the only lasting solution to end prolonged suffering of the people of South Sudan, both in displaced and refugee camps. Sabri Isaac Hamis from Yambio writes, hello, John Tanza and the team. The idea of continuous appointment and firing of finance ministers won't really improve the fragile economy of South Sudan. I urge President Kiir to just reinforce policies governing finance management and set laws to investigate all gains and corrupt officials looting government money. Once policies in finance are strengthened, all money going into individual pockets will be channeled into sectors like agriculture for production. James Roy Majok from Mayom County in Unity State writes, the 13th anniversary of South Sudan's independence is a very important day to all citizens of the country. It's a day we were recognized continentally and worldwide. We are very jubilant for the day, and let us celebrate the day carefully and freely. Views expressed here does not represent the views of the Voice of America or the South Sudan in Focus program. Keep your comments coming. We shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. I repeat, our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. And that's all we prepared for you this Friday, July 12, 2024. We now leave you with the song On a Guide by Crazy Fox, which means I'm going nowhere. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm not going to be able to do it.
and I'm a machine, and I'm my normal, and I'm big, and I'm going to say that you know your life, so goes in the fox and a guy, and I'm a machine, and I'm my normal, and I'm big, and I'm going to say that you know your life, so goes in the fox and a guy. Me no have no safe place to run. One man first no have no place big one. Me have it happen, you know what I want. Surely you defeat in life in Milan. Me shut up, I feel up a man.